variations in customer demand. Now, instead of clustering to make sure that the workload gets distributed, they'll also have the choice of being solo professionals and using the internet to find customers. Laws or customs will hold back the rate of this change. Doctors and lawyers in most countries are limited in how they can solicit business. But even if they can't go directly to patients or clients, these solo practitioners can act as free agents to solicit work from established firms. With the web, becoming a free agent is no longer limited to athletes, artists, actors, and other big-name professional or creative types. It's now available to almost every kind of knowledge worker. Already, the free agent labor pool, including self-employed workers, independent contractors, and workers at temporary agencies, totals about 25 million Americans. One benefit of self-employment is diversification. You're less likely to be out of work if you have several employers than if you have one. Not everyone will choose the freelance approach. A lot of people want to work for the bigger firms. They like the idea of belonging to one company, working on long-term projects, and having continuity in people and in the culture of a particular workplace. They invest in their career, and the company invests in them. A lot of the most interesting jobs, such as software design at my company, are core areas that won't be outsourced. Most companies, including Microsoft, work hard to make it attractive for good employees to stay long-term. A lot of developers and researchers joined Microsoft because they saw the chance to design software or develop technologies that will be used by millions of people. Like many artists, they want their work to reach the largest possible audience. People who want to work for a big company will, and people who don't want to will have interesting alternatives. A web work style also makes it easier for people who have good skill sets, but who can't or choose not to work full-time. Because they can find more work over the internet and do more work remotely, such people will have new opportunities, and society will benefit by better utilizing this huge pool of talent. Many knowledge workers will live where they want to live and structure their work the way they want it and still make major contributions to the businesses they work for or with. In the web work style, employees can push the freedom the web provides to its limits. When it comes to work style, the choice will be the workers. As a business manager, you need to take a hard look at your core competencies. Revisit the areas of your company that aren't directly involved in these competencies, and consider whether web technologies can enable you to spin off those tasks. Let another company take over the management responsibilities for that work, and use modern communications technology to work closely with the people, now partners instead of employees, doing the work. Also consider the employees who have strong expertise but decide they don't want to work full-time. Better communication tools may allow you to utilize their skills on an ongoing basis. The competition to hire the best people will increase in the years ahead. Companies that give extra flexibility to their employees will have the edge in this key area. Part 3. Manage knowledge to improve strategic thought. Bad news can be really disheartening. When you get news of a product failure, there's a real temptation to think, oh, that's as much as I want to know about that. I think I'll go home now. I think I'll work on something else. When you lose a customer, it can be tempting to tell each other, ah, that customer is not very sharp. They just made the wrong decision. Meetings in which colleagues try to explain away a product failure or a lost customer are the worst. But they are preferable to the meeting that isn't called, to the silence and inactivity when nobody tells you something negative is going on. If a competitor introduces a superior product, or if you lose a customer, resist the temptation to put it out of mind. Ignoring bad news is a formula for decline. Only the Paranoid Survive is Intel Chairman Andrew Grove's book about the need for a business to stay alert to change at what he calls major inflection points in the market. In the book, Andy talks about how important it is for a company's middle managers, often the first to realize that what worked before doesn't quite work anymore, to confront senior management with bad news. Otherwise, he says, senior management in a company is sometimes late to realize that the world is changing on them, and the leader is often the last of all to know. In one example of a major inflection point, Andy describes Intel's slow response to a crisis over early versions of its Pentium chip in late 1994. Certain chips contained a minor engineering flaw. Intel reacted to the problem on the basis of it being a relatively insignificant bug that would affect only a very small number of users. Customers, however, felt differently. Highly technical users cared about minor computational errors. The general consumers Intel was now courting were alarmed at the mere suggestion that something could be wrong with their PCs. Intel endured unrelenting bombardment, as Andy described it, much of it the result of customers rallying together on the Internet, before offering a free replacement part to anyone who wanted it. Few customers took the company up on its offer, but the public anger subsided immediately. An engineer himself, Andy confessed that he was one of the last to understand that his company now had to respond to a customer crisis as a consumer products company would, not in a month, as it had taken Intel this time, but in a matter of days. It took a barrage of relentless criticism to make me realize that something had changed and that we needed to adapt to the new environment. The lesson is, we all need to expose ourselves to the winds of change. We need to expose ourselves to our customers, both the ones who are staying with us, as well as those that we may lose by sticking to the past. We need to expose ourselves to lower-level employees, who, when encouraged, will tell us a lot that we need to know. Some experts say that companies struggle with the need for change because they haven't been designed for change. Hierarchy gets in the way. The corporate culture sees innovation as risky and suspect. Worthy failure, experimentation, is punished. A similar reaction can set in against bad news. Lower-level staff may hesitate to bring bad news forward, and many managers don't want to hear it. Corporate structure and culture can be a real roadblock, no question. A change in corporate attitude, encouraging and listening to bad news, has to come from the top. The CEO and the other senior executives have to insist on getting bad news, and they have to create an appetite for bad news throughout their organizations. The bearer of bad tidings should be rewarded, not punished. Business leaders have to want to listen to alerts from salespeople, product developers, and customers. You can't just turn off the alarm and go back to sleep, not if you want your company to survive. Most of the excellent computer companies that Tom Peters and Robert Waterman cited back in 1982 in their fine book In Search of Excellence have experienced serious setbacks since the book came out. IBM saw both its mainframe and its mini-computer businesses undermined by PCs in the 1980s and 1990s. Digital Equipment Corporation undercut IBM's mainframes with its smaller mini-computers, only to be undercut itself later by the still smaller PCs that Digital and many other computer companies had dismissed as toys. Wang didn't see the PC revolution coming either and lost the word processing market to companies that provided software on the PC rather than on dedicated hardware systems. These companies still talked to their customers. They still had smart, responsive people working for them. IBM's own Skunkworks team had released the IBM PC in 1981, establishing a standard that made the PC a business tool. But IBM continued for two full decades to see PCs through the lens of its larger computer systems. This view distorted and slowed its response to a fundamental technology shift. After allowing Compaq to get out of the gate first with a 32-bit PC system, IBM watched its share of the PC market drop from 55% to 15% within a couple of years. Its share now hovers below 10%. Digital, despite a reputation for high-quality products and services, struggled throughout the PC era until Compaq, a PC vendor, bought it in 1998. Wang went through bankruptcy before emerging again as a systems integrator. Examples from the computer industry are only the most recent instances of an unwillingness to hear bad news. In 1920,